Welcome back. I'm Jesse Baines with Yahoo Finance Canada. You're watching Editor's Edition. And today we're talking about real estate during COVID-19. Today, I promise we're going to get to your questions. We're going to look at where the markets appear to be heading going into the busy fall season. We're going to talk policy and much more with Realosophy Realty's John Pasalis. Thanks for being here, John.
Thanks again for having me.
And we have Steve Suretsky in Vancouver of Oakland Realty. Thanks for being here, Steve.
Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to it.
Okay, before I ask you guys where you think markets are and where they're headed, let's have a listen to the Bank of Canada's Governor, Tiff Macklem. Have a listen.
Housing is slowing. And I think to some extent that reflects the fact that as the economy reopens, this demand for extra space is diminishing. You can now go to a restaurant. You don't have to eat everything in your own kitchen. So you're starting, as things normalize, I think you're starting to see some normalization there. But I mean, household debt is high. It is a vulnerability. It is something that we are concerned about.
Okay, let's start with the slowing part, John. We have talked about a bit of a slowdown, but this sounds quite similar to what he said months ago. Have things changed? Have things picked up as we head into the fall in the GTA, John?
Yeah, they've slowed down from the insane levels we were at in the first quarter this year. But the fact is demand is still strong, especially for low-rise homes. I mean, we're well above like a historical trends right now. So it's still a busy market. I don't know if I'd call it slow. It's still deeply seller's market, but for sure way less competitive than it was, 6 months ago.
And Steve, in the Vancouver area, how are things looking? I know Toronto and Vancouver tend to sort of mirror each other. Is that still the case?
Yeah, I actually joked about this Tiff's comment in my newsletter this week, but I think it's important to context that we're coming off all-time record sales ever in the spring of this year. So it's like, of course, you're going to slow off those insanely high levels. But if we look at, September numbers, condos hitting record high sales. So like, the condo market's picking up. Yeah, I know detached market's obviously coming off a bit, after prices accelerated 30% in the past 12 months. But like similar to John said, like Vancouver, yeah, it tends to mirror the Toronto market, and the market is still insanely competitive. Like, yeah, we've got a little bit fewer sales, but I mean, there's still a huge inventory crunch. I mean, if you're looking for a house, ask. And like, the problem is like, Tiff Macklem needs to come here in Vancouver and maybe try throwing some bids on houses, because, if he puts himself in a buyer's position with the shoes on, I mean, these buyers are so beat up. They're so discouraged. I mean, you just have average, normal working class people trying to buy a normal house, and they're competing with 5, 6, 7 people on every single house, and they're still going subject free $100,000 over the asking price. So, I mean, sure, the housing market's slowing down in terms of the number of home sales, but I mean, prices sure as hell aren't coming down.
I see clearly a new show called Undercover Governor, where the Bank of Canada Governor Tiff Macklem does just as you say, walks around Vancouver, bids on houses, and we'll see how successful he is. In the GTA, John, how competitive is it in terms of bidding wars? What would that the Toronto episode of Undercover Governor look like, John?
Yeah, I mean, still very competitive. Bidding wars, especially for houses, even more than condominiums. And when we look at bidding wars for houses, they're still more competitive in the suburbs than they are in the downtown core. I mean, Toronto homes, the nicest homes, are still going to get a lot of offers. But overall, the suburbs, I'd say, are still way more competitive. Very normal to have like 15 offers on a house on an offer night. So really, really competitive market still.
So when you say suburbs, do you mean like the Whitbys and the Mississaugas of the world? Are we still seeing some of that crazy action we saw in places like Scugog and Georgina and Brantford and all these? Well, not Brantford, well, Brantford, I guess, too, but further away from the city. Are those places that are like an hour, 2 hours away still as competitive as, well, I guess we've already answered that they're not as competitive as they were at the height of things, but are they still competitive?
Yeah.
When you talk about 15 offers, are we still seeing that?
Yeah. Okay. I can't say we don't do as much work up in those really, really outskirts and rural areas, but certainly like in the immediate GTA areas, like Durham region, York region, Mississauga, are all still quite competitive. Again, it's like those detached homes with bigger yards. Like it's still, you know, even up to like $2 million, you're getting double digit bids on offer night. It's that competitive. So I'd say it's still pretty hot.
Can you, John, explain that to me, offer night? So we see a listing somewhere on realtor.ca or wherever, one of your guys' sites. If I wanted to buy that house, can I only place an offer on offer night or anytime? How does that work?
So most agents who are listing homes right now in the GTA are usually pricing their houses for less than what they're worth or less than what they expect to get. And they usually will set an offer night a week after they hit the market, with the idea being it looks like a great deal. We're going to attract lots of people. We're going to get lots of offers. And normally they wait till the offer nights to receive bids. Sometimes some agents will accept what's called like a preemptive or a bully offer, but most of the time offers are accepted on a given night with the goal of getting, of course, more than the asking price.
Okay. Does it work fairly similarly in Vancouver, Steve?
Yeah, pretty much the same thing, right? Usually typical idea is you list on a Monday or Tuesday and then, you know, you take offers the following Monday or Tuesday, and it's generally speaking better for the seller if you get, you know, five offers compared to one, because you're probably gonna get more favorable terms. So, and I know that everybody always comments and says, well, yeah, of course they're getting, you know, 10 offers on the house because the realtors are underpricing them. Like I said, we've talked about this before, but, you know, as a realtor, as a listing agent, you only underprice the house a little bit for multiple offers if you're extremely confident on market conditions. I mean, it's absolutely listing suicide to try to do that strategy in like a balanced market. I mean, you know, so you only do it when the market conditions suggest that you can get away with it. And so, yeah, I think that's important to understand for anyone watching the show here.
Toronto right now, 75% of low-rise houses are selling for more than the asking price, which goes to show you that, like, you know, the vast majority of homes are getting bidding wars or selling for over asking, and that's really a sign of a very competitive market.
So would the unfortunate message to anybody scrolling the net looking at listings is to accept the fact that the price you see on that website is probably not what they're going to pay. It sounds like that's the case, John, if you say that many homes are going overbid. But what's the price situation like in the GTA? I know that sales had been falling, but prices weren't following. We've talked about inventory, but are prices still sort of sideways? Are we seeing a bit of a pickup in the last month or a couple of months?
Yeah, they actually picked up. So for basically all of 2021, the price for houses and for condos had plateaued. So prices on average for houses have balanced out at 1.3 million, which obviously is pretty high, but they leveled off. But September, that kind of leveling off ended and they actually climbed to over 1.4 million. So literally in 1 month, they went up about 7%. So, and again, I think this is just people returning to the market. A lot of people hit pause in July and August and then jumped back in September.
Maybe a missed opportunity for people that, we're waiting to get in, unfortunately, seems to be the name of the game with GTA and Vancouver housing. And here, 7%, as you say, you know, our homes are probably making more than we make through our jobs, but it is what it is. I want to talk about the concerns that he expressed at the end of that clip, Governor Macklem, Steve, about debt. I don't remember a Bank of Canada governor that didn't sound alarms over debt, but we, you know, lowering rates encouraged borrowing, people jumping into the market. So, you know, just from a sort of a macro lens, when does that change? I mean, debt is just this part of life. You know, taking on household debt, big mortgages? Is this just the way, is this the Canadian standard?
I think it's just the sort of monetary or financial system that we're in, right? I mean, David Dodds, former Bank of Canada governor, was talking about, Pelosi was talking about it for, 7-8+ years. And the sort of same drum continues. I just think the reality is, if you look at the debt picture, whether it's household debt or you look at, corporate debt, or even now, the Trudeau government taking on, a mountain of debt, it's like everyone's levered up to the gills here. And there's really, I don't think any part of the economy can actually withstand meaningfully higher interest rates. And I think everybody kind of knows that. And so to me, it's just this kind of grandstanding of like, hey, we have to be concerned about debt. Like everyone, I think it's just their message of telling Canadians to try to be a little bit more prudent about how much leverage they take. But I mean, I don't really think it's working.
Okay. So as promised, circle back to this, all this stuff, if we have time, but let's go to viewer questions. Let's start with Vipul Patel. Vipul asks, what are your thoughts on the Calgary housing market? Some builders are offering a 3 years rental income guarantee with full property management. The cash flow would be $300 monthly, and at the end of 3 years, return on the investment will be 93.3%. Please give your insights. Is this offer too good to be true? Steve, I'll start with you. I know you have looked at the Calgary market. I think you've even considered moving there. So what is your answer to Vipul here? Is this too good to be true, and your general views on Calgary real estate, please?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we got to look at seeing how the developers calculate 93% return over 3 years. I think that's going to surpass a Warren Buffett type return. So I think we have to be a little bit cautious there. I think the second thing, I'm personally optimistic on the Calgary market. I've got an investment play over there, but I'm a little bit cautious on personally the condo market there in Calgary. I think it's a little bit overbuilt. If you look at historically in Calgary, condos are not, investing in condos in Calgary is not like the same as investing in condos in Vancouver and Toronto. The rates of return historically for Calgary condos has not been good. There's just a plethora of land in Calgary. And the land is so cheap that in my opinion, they can kind of just keep building and building and adding more and more condos. So the play in Calgary, in my opinion, is to go with a piece of land. But that's my personal opinion.
So is that just with condos, is that just there's a lack of price appreciation the way we see in GTA and Vancouver?
Yeah, I think it's also just like you have to understand it's just like a different city and different province, right? I mean, like they don't have an affordability problem in Calgary. So, like there's not really a need or want or desire to live in condos. Like most people there will have a preference to live in housing because detached houses are so cheap anyways. And so if you're kind of faced with the decision of condo or detached, I think most, Albertans tend to go with detached homes. Whereas, in Vancouver and Toronto, yeah, like when, Vancouver, the benchmark price of a detached home is 1.8 million. People are basically kind of forced into condos, and that's pretty much what we only build now because there's no more land to sort of expand on to build new single family suburbs, right? So they're two totally, totally different markets.
John, I don't know how closely you've studied the Calgary market, but what's your take on schemes like this where they make these promises and offer you these massive returns? Like 93.3% seems pretty hard to resist. What's your view?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Steve. I mean, this is something that builders will often do, and it's usually based on very, very lofty expectations of a rise in home or condo prices. So, you always have to take those with a grain of salt. I agree 100% with Steve that this is just usually a marketing tactic from new builders.
Okay. We're going to move on to Piyush Patel. I don't know if you guys are related, just a coincidence, same last name. It's a very common last name. But Piyush asks, hi, please let me know how to avoid overbidding. Recently, I'm looking for a semi, but every time I ask a realtor, they say, quote, they already have multiple bids. You want to put your asking, but I always say no. So John, I know we've talked about this a little bit, but just in terms of avoiding overbidding, what are some tips that you offer clients?
So, I mean, the first key thing is, first of all, having your own agent who's representing you, because your own agent's the one who's going to tell you what a realistic value is for a particular property. So, I mean, as we just mentioned earlier, most houses are underpriced. So you might get a home that's really worth $900,000 listed for $799,000. So you need someone who's going to do the research to tell you what it's actually worth. So that's the first and most important point, determining what a fair price is. And then what you bid partly depends on how much you like the house and how competitive the offer night is. Because sometimes you might bid on a home, you know, if you're bidding on a home that is not staged, doesn't look great, you can sometimes bid a little bit less and get a little bit more value. The nicer it looks, the more offers they have, the more likely you are to spend at the very high end of what it's worth, if not even a little bit over. So, you know, it's kind of understanding the market conditions and the competition for that home that ultimately determines what offer you end up making relative to the value.
Yeah, you raise an interesting point. I'm not an analyst, market analyst the way you guys are, but I sometimes just walk around the neighborhood and see what's for sale, what's going on. And I saw two houses on the same street. One was nicely done, nicely landscaped. Everything was like updated inside. But then the other house, it looked like, I think I saw there were like trash cans in the front yard and possibly a fridge in the family room, just a couple of benches or something in the master. That one exact same house was listed for $150,000 less, and it stayed on the market for a couple of months, I believe. And the other one, it was gone the next time we walked by. It had a sold sign on it 3 days after the fact. So it goes to show that staging can help. But I have a follow-up to that question, John. You know, you raised the point of having your own agent. So if there's a house for sale and is it a bad situation to be in where the seller is also representing you? So he or she is getting both sides of the deal. Does that put the buyer at a disadvantage?
Usually not the best situation. Like I said, it's a tough market to navigate because, I mean, if you're always going to the listing agent, for number one, you're booking, you know, six different appointments to view six different homes on the weekend. Obviously, it's more challenging, but we always want someone to represent you and tell you what the property's worth. So that to address the whole question of like not overbidding, I mean, the listing agent is going to tell you to overbid because they're representing the seller, right? But I mean, you also brought up another very good point that like when we advise clients, a lot of times we'll advise clients to look for value. You know, you talk about that house that's $150,000 less because it's not staged. And my experience is a lot of buyers, especially first-time home buyers, struggle to overlook the staging, the peeling paint, the stuff that doesn't look great. And the people who end up buying those are investors because they have the vision. They don't care about it looking pretty. They spend 20 grand, they clean it up and they rent it out. So, and those homes sit on the market a lot longer. So, you know, if you're a savvy buyer, the ones that you should be looking for are the houses that actually don't look as great in photos, because the ones that look amazing in photos are going to get 15 offers.
Yeah. Just watch Property Brothers, everyone. I mean, we see what the transformations are and how upset the people look when they find out the price of the nice house and they get taken to some rundown dump, which ends up looking gorgeous at the end of the day. So, mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on to Chris Hertz. Chris asks, okay, I have some questions no one seems to want to answer. You don't find that house prices are ridiculously overpriced, that there's a danger of having a housing crash? If interest rates go up past 5%, people are going to lose their homes. Why is the government so willing to let this happen? With these prices, you have to bring in $100,000 per year or combined to afford to buy a home. So now buying a home has become unattainable for the low to middle class. There's a lot to unpack there. A 5% rates going up past 5%, we'll see if that ever happens, but losing their homes, government letting, I mean, there's a lot here, but Steve, what's your sort of response to Chris here?
Yeah, I mean, I understand, you know, his concerns and where he's coming from. I think it's just understanding the existing system that we're playing in. Global debt to GDP is at 365%. So, you know, if we narrow in strictly on Canada, right, we're one of the most indebted nations in the G20. But this is not just in the household sector, it's in the corporate sector and in the public government sector. So, you know, basically what happens is you don't really have like a free market anymore for interest rates, right? Like the Bank of Canada owns 40% of the Government of Canada bond market. So they determine the rate, essentially, for the most part, are determining the rate of interest. If you get rates at 5%, it won't just be people losing their homes. It'll be corporations, you know, going bankrupt that are obviously going to lay off employees, and vice versa. You know, the government won't be able to service its interest payments. So unfortunately, whether you like it or not, in my opinion, I don't think you have a free market in interest rates. And so I think that housing has become a political tool. It's such a large component of the overall economy that it is a public policy tool, right? I mean, there are people relying on housing and the valuations in housing to support their retirement. And so, yeah, I think it's, I think people, again, I just think it flies in the face of sort of these free markets and free, you know, free market setting interest rates. I just don't think that's the reality that we live in today.
Speaking of reality, let's talk about a reality, because Chris is concerned that, you know, people losing their homes and governments letting this happen. But I mean, governments do seem quite reluctant for prices to fall even a little bit. You know, as we saw Adam Bond talking on TVO, we played clips of him here. All these policies seem to designed to drive demand. John, do you think government, there's any scenario where government would let something like this happen, like a catastrophic failure, where people start losing their homes?
Yeah, I mean, it's out of the government's control. Like at the end of the day, you know, if you think about it, I mean, Chris raises a few points. I mean, the couple things to keep in mind is that a lot of the growth in house prices right now is driven by wealth more so than people's household income. And while people technically are stress tested to be able to afford a home if rates go to 5%, the reality is, you know, if rates go that high, it's not so much that they're not going to be able to afford their mortgage, it's that they're not going to be able to afford anything else, right? The thing that they stop paying last is their mortgage. They'll stop eating food, they'll stop buying everything else before they stop making their mortgage payment. So what ends up happening if rates end up going high, which I don't think are going to happen anytime soon, is that you just end up with this recession because people's consumption declines, right? So I don't think governments can prevent necessarily a decline, I mean, in house prices. At the end of the day, there are you know, market forces that come into play. We saw that in 2017 when we had a big bubble in Toronto and prices fell 20% literally in the span of like 6 months. So if it happens, it's just because of the market dynamics. It's pretty much out of the government's control. I mean, even if they encourage more debt, at the end of the day, if you're worried prices are going to fall, it doesn't matter how much you can borrow. You're still going to be reluctant to buy. So I don't know when that's going to happen. Again, there's too much stimulus right now into the economy, into the housing market for us to see a decline anytime soon. But 100%, it's possible. And especially when you have a rapid acceleration in prices, a rapid acceleration in debt, those are usually things that make economies more vulnerable.
Okay, so that's a good segue into our next question. This one comes from Paul Cox. Paul asks, and here we go, gun to your head again. I've done this a few times. When do John and or Steve expect Canadian house prices to fall? Let's tackle that first part there. Steve, when? Or is it better to say if? But if there's a when.
It kind of adds to John's last point there. Like, don't get me wrong, just because rates don't necessarily go up, you know, 3 to 3, 4, 5% doesn't mean house prices can't decline. I think that everybody is well aware that housing here is elevated, you know, extremely elevated. So there's certainly risks there. I mean, I look at more so, it's always going to be like, I think that if or when Canadian house prices eventually decline, it's always, in my opinion, it's never going to be a government mandate, hey, let's push home prices down 15% just for the hell of it. It's going to be some sort of macro event that's outside of Canada's control that happens somewhere else in the world and trickles through. And again, maybe there's talks, maybe that's Evergrande, maybe that's China slowing down. I look forward here over the next 3 to 4 months, given the months of inventory picture, the supply-demand imbalance suggests to me that barring some sort of black swan event, I mean, the housing market's going to continue to remain very strong here throughout the last bit of 2021. Now, again, into 2022, do we start seeing sales flow more listings coming on, maybe the economy slows down, maybe we do a double dip recession with all this, you know, inflation eating into consumer demand. Does that then result in a housing slowdown or downturn? I think that's certainly a probability. I don't have it as a high probability right now, but I don't see anything imminent, but maybe in 2022, again, if the economy slows down, sure.
John, I think you sort of suggested that the when is hard to pinpoint. So we'll move on to the next question. This is another when question, but it's not when prices will fall. It's from Rita Sharma. This is a very personal situation. So Rita sold our house in February because our real estate agent said it's a good time to sell. But honestly, that was our wrong decision. We're still looking for a home now, and it's so hard to find a home. Could you please suggest when is the right time to buy now? And I'll let you answer, but I just, you know, just to caution people out there, timing the market is not easy, especially when it comes to real estate. Just ask Evan Siddall of CMHC. I didn't mean that to be a diss, but, you know, it's the smartest people out there can get it quite wrong. And things happen beyond what was forecasted and what was expected. But what advice do you have for John? Is there maybe a season that's better, a time of year? You know, what would your advice be for Rita?
I mean, listen, the best time obviously is now or yesterday. It's not about kind of timing it, because even in busy markets, it's like we said, a lot of the times it's finding value. It's finding the, if you think about, like I said earlier, 75% of homes are selling for over asking. Well, can you find the 25% that aren't, and can you find some value there? Is the one thing to think about. I mean, this time, this idea of buying first, selling first is tricky. Yes, in hindsight, it's easy to say you probably should have bought first, but I think the key is not wasting time. I find a lot of the mistakes buyers make is they're bidding on homes that are out of their budget because they're not getting a realistic idea of what the value is. So they're looking at homes that are based on the list price when the list price is, you know, underpricing. So they're basically looking at homes that are out of their budget. So I think the key thing is making sure you're looking at places that you can realistically afford and at least being competitive on your offer nights.
Okay. We will get to more questions next time. I just want to quickly circle back to Bank of Canada Governor Tiff Macklem. Here's the second part of what he had to say during that speech, during the Q&A section. He was talking about the difference between Canada's housing markets and others ahead of COVID. Have a listen to that.
Canada's experience is pretty similar to many other countries. I know housing has come back very strong in the United States as well. I think what's a little different about Canada is that the vulnerability in Canada was probably higher ahead of the COVID crisis. And as it's come back quickly, that vulnerability has come back faster in Canada than in some other countries. But Canada, in many respects, looks like a lot of other countries, particularly medium-sized countries.
Okay. Does it seem like other medium-sized countries to you, Steve?
Yeah, I don't know. I just find it, I try to look at it from a global perspective, right? I think that, you know, Australia is one of those markets that I think is similar to us, right? Like didn't go through a housing correction in 2008, 2009. It's gotten so large that it's basically an issue of almost national security. And, you know, it's funny because like Australia, similar to us, brought in basically a mortgage stress test. They brought credit tightening. As soon as they brought that in, the housing market started to roll over. So, you know, they then unwound those measures to re-stimulate the housing market. And I just feel like that's kind of Canada's thing, right? I mean, in the US, I feel like the Federal Reserve, you know, supports the US stock market. And in Canada, it's like we support housing. Because every Canadian, you know, Canadians don't get excited about the TSX here. They get excited about pre-sale condos. So unfortunately, with the 30-year bull market, that's just the nature that we have created. It's the behavior that we've incentivized. And again, like I said at the beginning of the show, it's kind of, I think it's a little bit late now, you know, to try to rein it in.
Okay, that I just realized I forgot to answer the second part of Paul Cox's question, which was a very important one. How do I watch the next episode? So here's how you can watch the next episode. Head over to yahoofinancecanada.com, scroll down a little bit, there you go, and see where those players are, those player buttons. It's gonna be in one of those three spots. on Wednesdays every 3 weeks. We've got our live show playing there. Be sure to check that out. All kinds of market updates going on there. And we also have our own real estate topic page. You can look at old videos there, all kinds of old, older videos, all kinds of articles and content. There's our last episode playing right there if you want to check that out. So I will end this show with a thank you to John Pasalis of Realosophy Realty. Thank you for being here, John.
Thanks again.
And Steve Soretsky of Oakwin Realty in Vancouver. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for having me on. Some good questions today.
Yes, indeed. And we'll get to more next time. And until next time, see you.